hence the old problem of whether democracy and liberalism are worth having anyhow. And that's what it comes down to. The footnote on territorial democracy, I went to a New England town meeting 2 weeks ago. The question came up of how to get rid of traffic jams. And one member of the group got up and said bigger and better traffic jams were desirable because they would keep the tourists out. And most of us agreed with him. Well, this, when you start, you've got first to say, what do we want? Now, it seems to me that we never get anywhere on this question of democracy until we realize that it is two quite different things. There is ballot box democracy and there is ethical democracy. What we really want, fundamentally, is ethical democracy, namely certain standards of respect for the individual and that sort of thing. This is the root of constitutionalism, and I believe it is historically correct to say that it probably goes back to the idea of the two swords of the Catholic Church, two there are, Imperial Caesar. The notion of the law as something more than just will. But now we come to the other side of democracy. Many of us, including myself, do not just want ethical democracy. We also have to believe in a certain machinery. That is, we think as an act of faith that on the whole, one is more likely to get ethical democracy in a system of limited electoral government. But now, also, you have never grown up politically until you realize that in the short run, the dictator can be more democratic than the electoral. To me, that is the foundation of wisdom in discussing this whole problem. In the short run, the philosopher king can be more democratic than the popular. The believer in democracy, then, has to admit that his system is not always going to hit the heights of excellence which all he was may be reached by the dictatorial or royal regime. What, then, is the argument for the machinery? I think perhaps the most important one is the succession crisis. The succession crisis. Who comes after the dictator when the dictator dies? I really have two arguments on this. First, the fact that a good dictator seldom stays good. Power corrupts and corrupts absolutely. But the other, and much more important, is the question of the succession crisis. And a system which is less good at any one point of time, but which nevertheless sets up a machinery for selecting leadership which can work on without the upheavals and losses which one sees in so many countries which have the dictator of the revolution, the dictator of the revolution, has much to say for it. But then the machinery by itself is not enough, as most of the great thinkers on democracy from Burke to Abraham Lincoln have stressed. The basis of democracy is the personal character of the citizen. You'll find that in Burke, of course, and you'll find that in Lincoln. And now, if you follow that through clearly, if we are to talk of watersheds in the political history of the West, I would be inclined to think that it came when the vote ceased to be treated as an earned privilege and began to be treated as an absolute right. It's amazing how late this change is. It's about 1850. Remember, the American Constitution was adopted, I'm almost tempted to say, if it ever was. If you know the history of the Constitutional Conventions, you'll know what a near thing it was and how much rigging there was and all that sort of thing, by an extraordinarily small number of voters. Universal suffrage. Well, we haven't quite got it yet, even in all of the United States. But the notion up until fitness to participate. And perhaps the most important single change has come when we now treat a vote as something that anybody should have, rather like the remark of one of our university deans that as far as he could make out from the recent literature, every baby should be stamped with a BA at birth. But today, a vote is something everybody ought to have. And we have the great modern superstition that democracy is a cure for problems rather than an additional problem. Victorians knew better. Democracy was not a cure for problems, it was an additional problem. In dealing with the new societies into which we are now plunging part of the greater part of the world in terms of population, we would do well to go back to these much more sophisticated Victorian ideas of democracy than to this modern Jacobinism. I must say that I think that we are perhaps a little bit too pessimistic about our chances of communication. I think that many people believe in the liberal values the same way the character did who was so pleased to discover he was talking prose all of his life. As you sit down, I believe. Anyhow, you remember, he discovered that he'd been talking prose all of his life. I think that most not insane individuals would believe in the liberal values if they were presented to them as specific situations and not as something up in the sky. You'd say, do you really want, you'd say to some African, do you really want a society in which you can be dashed over the head and killed if one of the gendarmerie wants to do it, or if the dictator wants it done? Do you really want a society in which you can be starved if somebody else grabs your food? In other words, who really, sanely, would adopt the state of nature which has been so accurately described as nasty, low, brutish, and short? So the problem is to communicate more concretely. And as one slight ray of hope, I would suggest to you the example of Japan. Because after all, I do not believe that Japan had any great democratic tradition before the contact with the West. Of course, there was some diffusion of power under feudalism, I know, but I don't think that there is anything in Japan, I'm speaking very broadly now, I'm not as an expert, I don't think there's anything in Japan in 1840 comparable to any of our traditions of liberal democracy. But the great advantage that the Japanese had was that they made contact with the West while we still believed our own ideas and knew what they were. Nobody seems to have thought about that. They sent their men over to study to how to organize a society, how the West did. And they were lucky enough to kill us when we still knew. Consequently, victorious statesmen could communicate with the Japanese because they knew what it was all about, and they weren't talking about a Nazi. Has it perhaps occurred to you that there might be some relevance to the present situation? When the Japanese came in contact with the West, the bestseller of the West was Samuel Smiles' Self-Help. Whereas now, when the unfortunate Afro-Asians come in contact with the West, the bestseller is the Affluent Society. In other words, we need to recapture our own political sophistication. Not to worship democracy as a goddess, but to think of it as a means. And our real aim, as has been said, is the ethical democracy. On the other hand, I and a good many other people think that this ethical democracy is best realized through some species of limited electoral government. But we have to realize that that only works under certain special conditions. requires anthropology, a certain set of customs and outlook, and then to go and consider them, and then to translate all that back into very simple language. It seems to me that that is our only possible hope, because as things stand now, most Western propaganda is damn nonsense, frankly. And we are not telling the Afro-Asians anything that's doing any good.